This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 2nd, 2013, episode 649.
Good morning!
It's Thursday.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Yes, it's Thursday, folks. That means you only have one day left to surf the web for off-kilter classifieds, email them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com with really bad ads in the subject line. On tomorrow's live show, like we do every Friday, the reading of the ads will be followed in short order by the presentation of the following fantastic prizes to the three listeners submitting what Glenn and Jamie decide are the best of the worst. The Leather Therapy Laundry Solution and Rinse Gift Set in the 20-ounce size. That will wash a lot of saddle pads, folks. Clean and condition natural and synthetic leather, fabric, and sheepskin items in your washing machine. Use the solution and rinse to restore the soft feel of suede or smooth leather, fabrics, and fleece. You can visit them online at leathertherapy.com. And prize number two for tomorrow's show, a $50 gift certificate from horsemaniac.com. Horsemaniac.com is the online shop you've been looking for. Horsemaniac.com offers unique horse-themed designer apparel and a wide variety of equestrian merchandise. Visit their website at horsemaniac.com right now and take advantage of the Horse Radio Network's special offer. Use the coupon code HRN10 at checkout and receive a 10% discount. And third, Uncle Jimmy's gift pack of Uncle Jimmy's products. And Uncle Jimmy's has hanging balls in sugar-free, so your horse can get the nutrition and fun he needs without the sugar. You can visit him online at uncle-jimmys.com. Now, sit back and enjoy this fun frolic through equestrianism with Glenn the Geek, compliments of the Driving Radio Show.
This is Glenn the Geek.
And this is Ellen Harvey of the U.S. Trotting Association, and you're listening to the Driving Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network.
Well, howdy, Helen. Thank you so much for co-hosting this week.
Well, hello, Glenn, and thank you so much for having me.
Now, we have not fired Wendy. For all of you going, oh, where's Wendy? Wendy will be back next week. She is recovering from Martin's auction because she was there all weekend. And apparently she claimed to me in an email I got today that she's getting older, she's laying on the couch, and she's too old for this now. So that's what I got out of Wendy today. It's all I've heard about the auction so far. I don't know if she bought anything or what the story was. We'll hear about that next week because, of course, Martin's is a place we all want to go as drivers. But Ellen is joining me because we have a very special episode today. Ellen, what is your title?
I am the Director of Harness Racing Communications. We are a part of the United States Trotting Association. We are the registry for standardbred horses. Standardbreds, of course, also pace, but the generic term for that is trotting. And we are the representative for the standardbred horse throughout the United States.
Well, and Ellen was kind enough to join me as co-host today to fill in Wendy's spot. And she was also kind enough to line up all the guests that we have coming on to talk about the USTA and all the different aspects of it. A fascinating show prepared for you today. We're gonna talk about the USTA, but we're also going to talk about the fair circuit that is so unique to harness racing. We're going to talk about a driving school that everybody listening here today is going to want to do because it's just a fantasy come true. And then we're also going to talk, we're going to do a little bit about betting for rookies, betting 101 when you actually go to the racetrack. What do I do? So we have all of that coming up. You've lined up a terrific show.
I think we have. I think there's a little bit of something for everyone. Folks that want to make a whole bunch of money at the track, which of course we know is easy to do, and folks that want to go flat and fast on a racehorse. And I know all your viewers want to do, listeners rather, want to do that.
Yes, they do, and I'm one of them, and Wendy does, because she does combine driving, so she gets to do that with obstacles in the way. You guys
just
get
as
to
soon
do
as
it.
She gets off the couch.
Yes, you guys get to do it without the obstacles. See, that's the difference.
Yes.
Now, you, how long have you been with the association?
I've been with the association almost 20 years,
wow.
But I'm actually a fourth-generation horsewoman. My great-grandfather owned a livery stable in northern Vermont, and my grandfather drove an 8-horse hitch with the circus in the Northwest.
Really?
And then farmed with draft horses, and my father is a Hall of Fame standardbred trainer, so I come by this honestly. I'm primarily a writer and a publicist, but I've owned a few horses as well, so this is my genetic makeup, I guess.
So now you grew up at a farm that was doing standardbred racing. Were you driving from the time you were like 2?
No. I did grow up on about a 350-acre standardbred farm in southwestern Pennsylvania. My mother showed 5 gated horses when she was a young woman, and she and my father met at a farm. What else? And so I grew up riding ponies, and we had a pony cart and drove around the roads of the area where we lived. And but no, you know, it was made very clear to me that this is a very hard way to make a living, which I think all your listeners can agree. And education was a very good thing. And then, you know, once you go to law school or something like that, you can buy all the horses you want. So I've grown up with that, and I dabble in horses, but I write about them for a living.
Well, and you know, that's something that you said, you know, that's something that we were all told growing up, is that, you know, you won't make money in horses. And that's true whether you're in the racing side of it or the pleasure side of it. So let's talk a little bit about, you've been there for 20 years. How have you seen harness racing change over that period of time?
Well, I've seen a lot of changes, a lot of challenges as well. I've seen the evolution of the breed. They are going faster and faster with less and less human intervention. We have artificial insemination in our sport. We do have limits.
So that does make it different than the thoroughbreds,
right? Yeah. Which the thoroughbreds don't have, but we have stallion book limits as well, which are put in place to assure sufficient heterogeneity within the breed, but that allows us to more quickly and more easily breed the best to the best and hope for the best, as they say. You know, our bottom line is, excuse me, is speed, and certainly we keep score by money as well. So the better horses are able to come to prominence fairly quickly and be identified, and they pass their genes on to their progeny fairly quickly. It used to be that they had to wear all kinds of equipment, and you had to do all kinds of maneuvers to get them to go fast, and now really that's not so much the case. They come to their speed a lot more quickly and easily than they have in the past. I think we've certainly seen some challenges legislatively and some other challenges in the commercial marketplace. Horse racing of any kind is a very, very cerebral sport. If you're going out to watch the horses race, that's very nice, but we don't make any money selling hot dogs and programs. We make money by people betting on the sport, and this is a generation that wants everything in 144 characters on their Twitter account, or they're not interested much beyond that. So if you're going to be good at betting on horse races, you've really got to study horses warming up. You've got to study the programs. You've got to study the replays. It takes a long attention span, and there's less and less people that want to do that. There's 300 channels on the television. There's a lot of competition for your gambling dollar as well, and a lot of competition for your attention span. There's also a different political climate in every state where there is racing, and there are challenges found in that as well. I live here in New Jersey, where we have Atlantic City, and we have a political system that does quite a lot to protect Atlantic City, even though they're geographically a very long way from any racetrack. So those have been changes I've seen in the last 20 years, but we persist, and I think that we will persist another 20 years and 20 years beyond that, I hope.
Well, you know, obviously, we've been talking the last couple of weeks, Alan, about adopting retired racers and how standardbreds can, you know, what they can be used for in their second life after they've been raced. And we determined that they can be used for a whole lot of different things. And we talked to people who are using them for riding and driving and pleasure and competition in many different ways. But today we're here to talk about what they do in their first life, and that is racing. So why don't you introduce our first guest for us?
Well, our very first guest today is my colleague Dan Leary. He's our communications director for the United States Trotting Association, and he's going to tell us a little bit about what our organization does and how it's structured, and also the history of how we came to be. Okay, good afternoon, Dan. Thank you so much for joining us today. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what is the United States Trotting Association. I get the United States part. Maybe you can fill us in on the rest.
Well, the USTA is a not-for-profit association that consists of standardbred owners, breeders, drivers, trainers, and officials. And it's an organization that provides services to our members as well as some benefits. And there are certain areas that we're sort of the governing body of the standardbred industry. It's interesting because we're the national office, much like people would think about the NFL or Major League Baseball, but we're an office that doesn't have the powers of a commissioner.
Well, now I understand that, of course, you're the registry for racing, but you don't just register horses. You do a whole lot more than that. You can track them pretty much from birth to death. I mean, every time a horse shows up at a racetrack, so many of their other activities. Tell me all the ways that you can track a standardbred's activity over their life.
Well, you know, let's talk about how the USDA came to be and the history. Because that's sort of a lead into the registration process and the racing information and all the different records. The USTA was founded in 1939. In fact, at the end of the year, we're going to celebrate our 75th anniversary. And harness racing, standardbred racing, was basically regionally controlled before it became centralized. And since 1948, the USTA has been located in Columbus, Ohio, where we are today. Prior to the 1960s, the USTA actually did have commissioner-like powers. It was a regulatory body, but that has now morphed into a situation where the individual states are now regulating racing within their states, for, not only for harness racing, but the other breeds as well. So that leads us to what we do and why we were formed, and primarily, first of all, it's a membership organization. We have nearly 20,000 members. But some of the most important things were record keeping. So every standardbred has to be registered by the USTA, and we're the only issuer of registration documents. So the first thing is, once they're registered, they need to do that before they're eligible to race in North America. They need to do that before they're eligible to do any breeding, and the USTA coordinates worldwide because we have relationships and associations around the world, so that we can assist with the importing and exporting of horses that are registered with us.
Now, with thoroughbreds, we all know how they have the tattoo on the lip. And, you know, a lot of us have adopted off-the-track thoroughbreds over the years. Is it done the same way with standardbreds? Is that the permanent ID?
It can be, but what's more popular now is called freeze branding, and they actually put a number, they freeze brand a number onto the horse, on the horse's neck, and that's a little bit more common now than the tattooing. I'm not sure if you know, but my background before I was at the USTA was a lot with thoroughbreds, so I'm very familiar with the lip flippers.
Yep.
and checking the tattoos, but the freeze band is a lot easier. It's what's used to maintain our database, which is one of the other things. You know, we talked about registration now, as far as racing and breeding records. We take DNA on the horses. We identify them with a number. And then once they're registered and they have all that in place, we basically track them all along the way. every race they're in, every sale of a horse, every time there's any breeding, the foals, and what happens to those foals. So we have the complete database of all the information on the horses, as well as the people, which includes thousands of drivers, trainers, breeders, and owners. So we are the record keepers. You have to register with us, and then we keep track of everything.
Now, Dan, you mentioned that you interface with other countries that have standardbreds and harness racing. Where else could I go in the world and see harness racing if I wanted to take an exotic trip someplace?
Well, there's lots of places in Europe. They race in Italy and they race in France. If you wanted to go a little bit further, you could go to Australia and New Zealand. So the racing is pretty popular around the world.
Is United States the most? Is it the most popular in the United States, harness racing?
I would say it is. I neglected to mention Sweden. It's very popular in Sweden as well, but I think that the United States has the most racing, the most racetracks, and certainly the most race dates during the course of a year.
Glenn, Dan just mentioned Sweden. There's certainly the Scandinavian countries, Denmark and what have you, also have harness racing. In Sweden, the national lottery is tied into harness racing, and as you can imagine, that gets quite a lot of people paying very close to racing, that the numbers in their lottery, which is called, I think, the V65, is tied into harness racing. That would be very nice if we had that in the United States. We don't, but that gets a lot of eyes. Sweden is certainly a much smaller country, but they're very lucky to have that tie-in with the lottery there.
And we have a lot of listeners at the Horse Radio Network in Sweden, so hello. That would be nice if anything in the equestrian world got a piece of that. And, of course, in other countries like Britain and other places, they do of the lottery. But we've chosen to do other things with ours. Now, you guys are also part of the American Horse Council, right? And we've talked about the American Horse Council because they're the ones that really help provide the legislative support in Congress and in D.C.
Yep, we work with a lot of equine outside agencies. The American Horse Council is really important. As you know, legislation is pretty much provides the rules for how we race and how the horses are taken care of. So it's important to be involved with them. We're also involved with other industry associations that have to do with racing, medication testing, and developing model rules for some of those things. So we try and be involved with as many of those as we can, and we're actually very active in doing that, which kind of leads me to some of the other things that the USTA does, because we're talking about legislation and rules and things. We also do licensing. Every driver and trainer has to pass an examination by the USTA before they're able to go to the states to get licensed to participate in racing. We also make rules, and while racing is at what we call commercial or the paramutual racetracks, is regulated by the state. Many states follow the rules that the USTA adopts, and they use that as a model for their state rules. Harness racing has a. When I first joined the USTA, the second weekend I was here in Columbus, I went to see fair racing, which, you know, the other breeds, they don't really have fair racing to the extent that standardbreds do. And it was really interesting to see it on a real grassroots level. But in county and state fair racing, the USTA rules are usually govern those events.
We're going to have T.C. Lane talk to us about that a little bit later on this afternoon, Dan. We're excited about that. Now, if somebody's reading this and wants to call up more information about harness racing or about the USTA on their handheld device, give us a website to go take a look and get more information.
Well, we're often people often say that the USTA has the most comprehensive website in all of horse racing. And that website address is ustrotting.com.
What can we get on there?
Well, we do lots of things on there. The front page is the newsroom, so you can get the current news in the industry. There are many tabs for different kinds of racing information: people, horses, race results, entries for races. You can actually go into our pathway system, and you can get past performances on
I was going to ask you that. If I adopt an ex-racer, I can go on there and take a look at what he or she has done?
You can look at reports for horses, for people. It's an amazing database, and you pretty much can research anything you like. And then the other parts of the website are basically to provide online services and information for our members and for our fans and even members of the media.
Well, terrific. Well, Dan, we thank you so much for joining us today here on the Driving Radio Show. And, you know, you've helped us a lot, and I know we've talked in the last couple of episodes about adopting X-Racers, and we hope that many of our listeners choose to do that at some point. Now they can know where to go to look up what their horse has done.
That's right, and we actually have a couple programs for placement of retired horses that you can find out a lot about on our website, our SOS program, and Full Circle. So those are some things that people can look into, because that's a really important element of what we try and do as well.
Speaking of associations and societies, today's show is sponsored by the American Driving Society. If you haven't hopped over to their website yet, you should. It's AmericanDrivingSociety.org. We talk to Susie almost every week here on the show about everything that's going on there. We announced last week where the annual convention is going to be. And you can find everything that you need to know about driving here in the United States over at their website. The Omnibus is now out for the competitors out there, so you can probably find that online as well. So it's AmericanDrivingSociety.org. Consider a membership and tell them that you heard about them through the Driving Radio Show. Well, our next guest is somebody that I met before, and I believe has been on our shows before, and I just love her. She's so good at explaining things.
Well, yes, Glenn, we're going to talk to Jessica Schroeder. She's the Outreach and Membership Enrichment Coordinator at the U.S. Trotting Association, but right now she's very busy putting together a fantasy camp for folks that like to drive horses. We have a driving school, starts at the end of May in Goshen, New York, which is right outside of New York City, for those that have always wanted to ditch those obstacles and for once go hard and fast on purpose, as you point out, and that's Jessica Schroeder. Good afternoon, Jessica. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to talk a little bit about the USTA's driving school. This is kind of a fantasy camp for all those combined drivers out of there who have been longing for a fast horse and an open track.
Woo-hoo! I'm ready. Sign me up.
Okay.
When do I
Tell
go?
Tell us a little bit about how this works, where it is, when it is. Give us the scoop, Jessica.
Okay, and what you said is exactly how I would describe it. It is a fantasy camp. Everybody who goes gets to have an experience of driving a real racehorse out on the racetrack with other horses, and I think that is one of the greatest experiences that anybody could have. I haven't put anybody behind a racehorse that hasn't thought that was just the most fantastic thing to do, and they were itching to do it again.
Well, I got
to
say, so, Jessica, we've all done it accidentally. Those of us that drive. To actually do it on purpose would be great.
And I tell you, some of those guys that go out there, you know, some of them are scared because some of them have never had any horse experience, any driving experience. But then we also get some people that, you know, have sat behind a lot of horses and a lot of different types of horses, and they say that this is just a truly unique experience, something they've never done before. You think, oh, driving one horse is just driving another horse, but it really is a very different experience.
These are standardbreds in training, right? These are not old retired horses.
I was going to ask that. That was my question.
Correct.
I don't get a plug.
These are all horses that may have raced last week or maybe Indigo tomorrow. You never know what type of horse you're going to be driving. These are active racehorse barns. So no, these are not horses that have been retired from the track and are looking for a second career right now. These are horses that are going to be racing. So you might be taking care of a horse on Thursday, and you might be able to go watch him race on Saturday. And who knows, if he makes it to the winner's circle, maybe you can hop right in.
Now, what is, so give me an idea, how many days is it? What is each day like?
Okay, this is the 15th year that we've had the driving school, and it's going to be from May 29th until June 2nd. We have like an opening reception on Wednesday night, and then Thursday we put you right into the barn working with the horses. So you might
and
be
the location
mucking stalls.
Is?
You might be mucking stalls. You might be grooming horses, getting them ready. Then you'll take them out on the track, and when you come back in, you're going to be giving them a bath and getting all sudsy soapy, and then putting the horses away when they're all finally all cooled out. So you get the whole, you know, from top to bottom. This is what a real racehorse barn is. Works like this is what you're going to be doing, and then you get to go out and drive the horses as well. Now in the afternoon we do have some classroom type sessions, so you'll be actually hearing from some of the leading drivers, trainers, farm managers. You're going to be learning from the pros of the sport. So on Thursday, for example, we're going to be having a classroom session on driving strategy, and then another one on care and conditioning, so like the training of a horse. You're also going to be hearing from a veterinarian who's going to be talking about nutrition and vet care, diagnosing lameness on a horse, a lot of things that are specific to standardbreds but can be translated into other disciplines and other breeds of horses as well.
Yeah, I mean, horses are horses when it comes to that stuff. Now, tell me, who goes to this? Is it just a little bit of everybody? Is it people? Is it mostly people who are horse people that just want to see it? Is it drivers? Who goes?
We get everybody involved. You do have to be 16 years of age in order to come to the driving school. So we have some kids that are still in high school that are coming out, and they say, you know what, I think I want to have a career in horses. So they come out to kind of see what it's like. We do have some guys that come in and they want to become drivers. So the nice thing is that we have the driving school, and then Harness Racing also has something that's called amateur driving, where you're not going to be a professional driver right off the bat, so you're going to want to go, and a lot of times those people drive horses that are a little bit older, a little bit more experienced, so if you can get hooked up with one of the amateur driving clubs, and they're held all across the country, so no matter where you're from, you can be hooked up with one of these groups. Then we also have people that, you know, might have been the owners of standardbred racehorses and just want to know a little bit more about what the day-to-day is in the barn area, kind of know what their trainers are doing with their horses during the day. So, I mean, our driving school, that's the greatest thing, is that it can be for anybody from all walks of life. Like I said, you do have to be 16 years old, but we do have some 70-year-olds that come to the school as well.
And it can be for people like Wendy, my co-host, and I, who just want to go and drive fast.
Oh, yes.
Okay, good.
Anything like that.
Now, Jessica, if you're going to be a good rider of a horse, you really have to be pretty fit and have good quads and strong arms and what have you. What if you've got a desk job and you bang on a computer all day long like I do? Can you probably do this?
Anybody can do it. That's the greatest thing. You don't have to be a 110-pound jockey, you know, like they are in thoroughbreds. Anybody can do this. You know, you're going to be sitting behind the horse, and that's one of the things that I really like about driving horses. A lot of times I feel like I'm in more control because I have a little bit more brace. I have a little bit more, you know, something that I can grab a hold of using those long lines and sitting behind a horse. I mean, I've seen, you know, 12-year-olds going out and driving horses, obviously with another person, you know, an adult that's more experienced. But, I mean, you can be as young or as old, you know, there really is no discrimination when it comes to standardbred harness racing. That's one of the greatest things.
Now, are the students in a regular jog cart, or are there special rigs for this school?
Well, for this school, we actually have something that's called a double-seated jog cart. So it's going to be something that some other people that drive other breeds of horses are probably going to be a little bit more familiar. It's like a bench seat that two people can sit on. So we're actually going to, whenever you're out driving a horse, you're going to be with somebody else. So you don't have to worry about, you know, if maybe you get a little scared sometimes, because some people, like I said, have never been around horses before. So we don't want to put them out with a horse when they might not be exactly comfortable with it. So we do have a professional driver or trainer that's going to be sitting with all the students when they go out onto the racetrack.
Now, is there a final exam, a test, a graduation day? How does all of this culminate at the end of the 4 days?
Okay, so you're going to be working in the barn Thursday.
Well, wait a minute.
Uh-oh.
Wait a minute.
Oh, sorry.
If it involves driving at the end of the 4 days, it has to be a party, because that's what we do.
Well, after you do all your barn work and you go and sit in your classroom sessions, We do have on Sunday. You can take the exam so that then you could get your driver and or trainer license here through the USTA.
Really?
But then you can participate in amateur driving and things like that. And then we also have something that's called a matinee race day there at Goshen Historic Trad. I should have said this is all taking place in Goshen, New York.
Okay.
We forgot about that.
Yeah.
So it's all going to be happening in Goshen, New York. And at the racetrack there, they do have a matinee where they have actual races that go on. And we do have a special driving school race. So there's going to be between 6 and 8 students that are going to actually participate in a real race. Again, with the double-seated jog carts, you're going to have a professional driver trainer with you.
No way, really?
But you are going to be going really fast.
Are you kidding? That's really cool. That's really
now,
cool.
Now, Goshen is where, Jessica? In New York's a big state.
Okay, Goshen, New York is about an hour and a half, 90 miles or so from New York City. It's a great location that a lot of people, we have people already signed up that are actually coming from as far away as California. But a lot of our participants will be coming from the New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania area.
And how can we sign up for this? If Glenn can get himself
I'm looking
out
up
of,
where Goshen is now.
Florida.
I'm on the map, Google Maps. I'm looking it up now. So,
how should he sign up if he wants to attend?
Okay, if you go to the United States Trotting Association website, which is www.ustrotting.com, we do have a section on there for the driving school. And you can enroll right online with a credit card. Registration is $350. So you can do it right online. There also is a driving school application on there. So if you would prefer to fill out an application and mail in a check, you can do that as well.
Or what's your phone number if somebody wants, if folks listening to this are not real web savvy?
Okay, if you want to have any talk about it, get any more information, you can contact me, Jessica Schroeder, at the USTA, and our number is 877-800-8782, and my extension is 3212.
And I know exactly where this is. It's right off of 84, where it comes out of Massachusetts into New York. Know exactly where this is.
It's right near West Point, right over the mountain from West Point.
And there's a big prison near there, too, just... saying. It's the thing I remember.
I believe it's the second to Saratoga only in the state of New York. There are more horses in the county around Goshen. And don't worry, they're not loose. They're all in stalls.
Yeah, it's right out of Middletown in New York. So, yeah, this is the easy location to get to, too. This is so much fun. How cool would that be? Every driver that's listening to this right now is drooling because we're all thinking the same thing, that this would be a blast.
I think absolutely. And you know, the best thing about this is there's no water hazards. There's no cones.
it's a straight flat track.
The occasional, you do have to make a left turn occasionally. We highly recommend taking a left turn occasionally. But other than that, it's flat and fast.
Now, Jessica.
On purpose, as you say.
I've met you before. So do you get out there on the track every once in a while and just have some fun?
Every once in a while, I do like to get out there. One of the great things about my job is that I get to travel and do things like fantasy camps and go and meet a lot of people. So unfortunately, I don't have a lot of time to do it anymore, but whenever I get a chance, I definitely go out there and like to go for a couple of training miles.
Now, Jessica, have any of the graduates of this school, you said this is now in the 16th year or so, there have been hundreds of people graduate. Has anybody actually got the custom-made colors and the helmet and gone on and won real races?
Well, we've had over 820 people come through the driving school, and most of them do become, you know, like owners of the sport. They do. Some of them go on and actually go and adopt horses that have raced in the past, and they want to, you know, retrain them and use them as a pleasure driving horse and things like that. We do have people that are working on their license and have started out at the amateur level and are looking to get what we call our P license. So then they can go race at some of the other racetracks and do this maybe full time.
So it's been a launching pad for a few people.
It has.
And I assume there's hotels nearby and it's easy to find a place to stay and all of that.
Yep, there are quite a few hotels. We do have a host hotel that's the Comfort Inn. And then there's also a couple other hotels that are out towards one of our locations, which is the Mark Ford Training Center, which is out, like you said, in Middletown. So there's quite a few locations, quite a few restaurants, but we actually do take care of most of your meals, so you shouldn't go away from the school hungry. And then there's an airport that's actually pretty darn close. I think it's about 20 minutes away. So anybody that's coming from a long location away, you know, like I said, we have some people coming in from California, so they're going to be flying in and heading right over to Goshen.
Now, Jessica, one last thing. Maybe you can tell the folks about the bonus is that the classroom location is in a really neat place. It's not just sitting around boring in a tack room someplace. Tell us about the classroom location. That adds to the fun.
That's true. We have, it's called the Harness Racing Museum and Hall of Fame, and that is where you can go and walk around and find out all about the history of harness racing. You can sit in a simulator, so even though you're going to be out on the racetrack, it's pretty neat to see what it would be like to be a driver in a race with, you know, eight other horses like right around you. So they do have what's called a harness racing simulator there. You can learn all about the standardbred, the history, the major players in the sport, both human and equine. And then that is right on the border of what we call Goshen Historic Track, which is one of the oldest racetracks that's probably around ever. And they will be going out there, and you'll actually be driving on Goshen Historic Track too. So to be out in the same place where a lot of the best in the sport have been, it's a great experience.
I'm ready. when was this again?
The Standardbred Driving School will be held May 29th through June 2nd.
And there's still openings for everybody?
And there are still openings. We are going to be closing registrations right around May 10th. So anybody that has some more questions or wants to know some more information, give me a call, 877-800-8782, extension 3212. And my name is Jessica Schroeder.
And you know, Glenn, in the past we've had a father-son, mother-daughter combos come to this, and they've given it to each other as gifts, as anniversary gifts, Mother's Day gifts, that sort of thing. It makes a great family experience as well. And I know last year that we had a 72-year-old gentleman. He said, all right, well, I can cross that off my bucket list. That was a gift his son had given him, and that was something he always wanted to do. So it's a great experience for a family situation as well.
Very good. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you very much.
Well, right after we have this Nutrition Minute from Kentucky Performance Products, we're going to talk about a topic that's near and dear to my heart and brings back memories for me.
Well, yes, Glenn. You know, speaking of nutrition, unfortunately, the opposite of nutrition is probably best found at county fairs, where you can get corn dogs and candy corn and
fried Oreos,
fried Oreos and pork chops on a stick and spun sugar. And that's a county fair. And not only can you find all those nutritional no-nos, you can find harness racing at county fairs, 220 of them, as far south as Philadelphia, Mississippi, as far north as Presque Isle, Maine, all out in the west in Missouri and Wisconsin and Minnesota. And TC Lane is going to tell us all about those places.
This Nutrition Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, the company that simplifies your search for research-proven nutritional supplements at kppusa.com.
Spring is here, and so are pastures full of luscious green grass. Spring grass is high in vitamins, minerals, and sugar. Most horses have little problem adjusting to the changing sugar levels found in spring pasture, but for at-risk horses, grazing on sugary grass can lead to big problems such as colic or laminitis. By paying attention to daily temperatures and following a couple of simple rules, you can limit your horse's access to such sugar-laden grasses. In the spring and fall of the year, limit grazing or stop it completely when daytime temperatures are warm and nighttime temperatures are below 40 degrees Fahrenheit. Under these conditions, the grass produces sugar during the day and it stores it in its leaves. At night, the plant transfers the stored up sugars to the roots and stems to fuel the growth. If the evening temperatures are cold, the grass will not make that transfer and all of the sugar will remain in the leaves where it is readily available to your horse. In the summer, when days are sunny and nights are warm, it is safe to allow grazing in the early morning hours, but it should be restricted late in the afternoon or evening. This is because most of the sugar that was produced the previous day has been used for growth overnight. Therefore, the level of sugar in the leaves is low in the morning. But as the day progresses, the grass once again accumulates sugar in its leaves in preparation for nighttime growth. So later in the day, the more sugar-packed leaves become. Because grass is a great source of essential vitamin E, horses that are restricted from grazing, especially easy keepers and horses in hard work, may develop vitamin E deficiencies. Lack of vitamin E can result in sore, stiff muscles, and neurological problems. Elevate Maintenance Powder from Kentucky Performance Products is an affordable way to provide your horse with the vitamin E missing from his diet. Each scoop provides 1,000 international units of natural vitamin E, and natural vitamin E is absorbed and retained in the tissues at a much greater rate than the synthetic vitamin E found in many feeds and supplements. Best of all, when you choose a Kentucky Performance Product supplement, you get a 100% satisfaction guarantee.
This Nutritional Minute has been brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. You can find all of their terrific products at kppusa.com. Well, hey, TC, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Glenn. Pleasure to be here.
I shouldn't let him on, though, Alan. He has a better radio voice than me, so I should...
Well, I have maybe a voice for radio, or a face for radio, I guess.
That's why I do it, TC. That's why I do it. No video for me. So I got to tell you, I grew up in central Pennsylvania, as the listeners know, and heart of Amish country in Lancaster and Lebanon County. And we lived over in, we lived near York, Pennsylvania, and the York Fair every year was where we went, and that was my first exposure to harness racing was the York Fair, and then the Gratz Fair and a couple of the others. But absolutely loved going out there and watching the standardbreds and the ponies and everybody else racing at the fairs. It was just so much fun, and that's really kind of makes it unique compared to the flat racing that we're used to here in this country.
Absolutely. What you've been able to fortunately witness is just a snapshot of what the 220 plus venues around the country present itself. So it's we're fortunate enough in our industry, our segment, to be able to share that experience with about 20 different states throughout the country.
Is it still that many fairs? You know, I know I realize you've probably lost a few over the years because fairs have changed or gone out or whatever. But I'm really happy to hear it's still that many.
It still is. As the agricultural presence throughout the country is somewhat, diminished at the agricultural society level, it's still a great bit of involvement. So we're pleased that the momentum has continued, and we're thankful for our rural roots in those areas.
Now, we just talked to Dan about the fact that the trainers have to be licensed and, all of that. Is that true at the fair level, too? Because is the fair kind of like the minor leagues? Let me ask that first. Is the fair kind of like the minor leagues before you get to majors?
Well, it is. But when you look at the format of our operation, it's kind of a misconception that we're unregulated. And it's absolutely, probably completely opposite. We're highly regulated in terms of the capability or the individuals that are participating. So with that, Glenn, everybody that's driving, training, and really associated with the horse, there's a screening, there's a licensing process that goes on that we assure the public that the individuals that are participating are at top level. So even though that is the level, the comparison of the minor leagues, they're still we still hold them to a higher regard than like a backyards event. So they're sanctioned.
Now, there's not... go ahead, Ellen. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, Glenn, that TC, now, when you go to a fair in York, as Glenn did or so many other people, what are your chances of seeing somebody that's going to be a Derek Jeter 5 or 10 years down the line or a John Campbell in our case? Are you going to see at your local fair maybe a superstar in the making, a driver,
well,
a trainer, even a horse?
It happens today. There are a lot of examples out there that are participating, and I'll use... Tim Tietrich, he's probably one of the higher profiled gentlemen out there that's driving in the big leagues, as you refer to, Glenn.
Yeah.
And, I was looking his statistics up the other day, and, he was racing at a small fair in Carmi, Illinois, for a year or two, and that's where he kind of cut his teeth, and now he's participating at the greatest level in the country, and really maybe in the world, you know. So he's amassed over $120 million worth of purse money in the last decade. So it's not for the faint at heart. It's highly competitive, and that's where he began, was at those county fairs. So absolutely, you can see that level. So that's the Derek Jeters coming up. So for all you, the Yankee fan, I guess, maybe I use a Joey Votto since I'm a Cincinnati fan. But
for all you combined drivers, that would be the fun. Training level. So that's for all you combined drivers out there.
That's it.
Now tell me, as I remember it, and that's a long time ago, but as I remember it, like places like the Yorts Fair and the Gratz Fair, there was not betting. There was no parimutuel betting. Are they running for purses, and is that put up by the fair? How does that work?
Well, the money that, you know, we're a self-supporting, I'd like to say, a self-supporting industry, where a lot of the racing that trickled down from into the county fairs derived from agricultural subsidies within the state. So it comes from the state ultimately, and then there's money that's earmarked that gets then sent to the fairs. So the overall goal is to have very little out-of-pocket money for those fairs to host those events, because then that's how we're able to keep that 220 roughly number fairs, because we make it feasible for them, and we allow them make available an opportunity to have a form of entertainment that they can't get elsewhere without, you know, monetizing that.
Do they still do horses and ponies?
In Indiana, we see some trotting bred races, and I've seen a couple of fairs here in Ohio that have used those as more of an exhibition.
Yeah.
So we don't wager on those. In Ohio, we probably have the largest percentage of county fairs where we do offer parimutuel wagering, and we have 65 fairs in Ohio, which is the largest state that offers harness racing, and 60 of the 65 you can wager. So it's exciting. So those listeners in PA can head west a little bit and have 60 opportunities throughout the summer.
Yeah, no, the fairs in Maine, I believe there's
in Maine
nine
do as well,
fairs
but
in Maine, and they're all parimutuel as well.
That is
now,
correct.
Now, TC, when you go to the fair, you bring your kids, you can usually walk right up to the cows and pet them, and right up to the chickens. How about at the fairs? Can you walk right up to the horses? And now, given they're great big animals, they're huffing and puffing and blowing, but can you get up close with these horses at the fairs?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I tell some of my non-racing friends when I try to encourage them, is that if you want to get an in the pit crew type experience, come to the harness races at the fair, because you get the sights and the smells, and you get everything that's right there, and you know, you get to shake hands with Derek Jeter, unlike an opportunity that you can do at another professional events. So yeah, you're right there, and you know, our horsemen, they understand our role at those levels, and they really, for the most part, do a nice job of welcoming the public into that to experience it, because it is a family event. And you know, it's not unheard of to have three or four generations all around that stall getting ready to race that one particular horse that afternoon at the York Fair. So it's a family-type experience.
Well, I got to tell you, there's, you know, this is not a fair, but talk about family-type experiences. My wife and I, probably 20 years ago, made our first pilgrimage to Lexington, Kentucky, before we lived there. And it was the first time we went to the horse park and did all of that. And then we had one of the best experiences we've ever had, and we've been to a lot of racetracks across this country, at the Red Mile. What a neat place the Red Mile is, and people that go to Kentucky sometimes overlook it. If you're a horse fan, if you're a racing fan, if you're a horse person, and they're running at the Red Mile, go see it. They had a Dixieland band playing. They had barbecue going. It was just a fun atmosphere with lots of cool stuff going on and some terrific harness racing, and in a beautiful setting.
Absolutely, and in the area in Lexington is very beautiful. But you know, then that's where I would encourage any of your listeners to look at fairs.ustrotting.com off of our website, and there are those pockets of that offering spread throughout the country, and there's really an opportunity to take in a very economical experience, and it's very worthwhile to do.
And now, what does a fried Oreo cost these days, TC? What are some of the gastronomic?
Well, TC, are you the size of the house?
These days? It really does get up there, and that's how I measure the economy at the county fair, is because I always go on the Italian sausage price or the tenderloin. You know, what used to cost $1.50, now we're at $5. So
are you required to visit all these fairs, and do you get a daily food allowance? Because if you do, I want your job.
Well, I tell you, it. Yes and no. They do expect me to be there. No, I do not get paid to eat there. So it's a balance. And the only thing that it does cost is a couple more pant sizes.
Yeah, I bet.
It makes it a long summer. Most people lose weight during the summer, but if you go to a lot of races, it goes the opposite.
Now, TC, I know one of the toughest jobs at the USTA is judging the Blue Ribbon Fair contest, trying to pick out, of all our terrific fairs that have harness racing, I know there's an award every year for the two or three very best harness races at a fair venue. And I'm certain that the tenderloin sandwich and the pork chop on a stick go with it. But can you give us some of the highlights of the past winners? I mean, if folks are looking to go to the best of the best, what are some of our Blue Ribbon winners?
Some of the ones that really stick in my mind would be the Canfield Fair. They're in Mahoning County.
It's in Ohio.
Then the Gratz Fair has been an award-winning fair.
That's in central Pennsylvania above Harrisburg.
Yeah, they have won, and I have to apologize. I don't have that complete list. Greenville, which is a dark county fair,
in Ohio.
They have won. We've had a large contingency from Ohio that's applied. I made reference to the Carmi Fair in Illinois. They were an award-winning fair. Michigan, they're a hotbed of county fairs really there, because they've kind of gone away from some of the momentum for paramutuals, but their county fair program, we have a large group of volunteers that really make it a great, great event. That's the Holland Fair in Michigan, and that group really do a nice job. So, but they're spread around, with that list and what they do offer on those Blue Ribbon award-winning fairs.
What's the furthest south we have a fair?
The furthest south would have to be Mississippi, of which I've worked that fair as a presiding judge in the past. It's a wonderful event.
What's the town?
It's in Philadelphia, Mississippi.
Okay.
That would be the furthest south. And the California State Fair, which I guess you could call it a county. It's not really. So I would say that Sedalia, Missouri would be the furthest west. Of course, your fairs in Maine would be the top of the north. So,
okay, for people that want to
spread out
on their map, a far way apart.
That's it. But use us as a reference; we can get you there.
Okay.
And where do I go again to find the fair list? Because I'm on your website right now.
Fairs.ustrotting.com.
Okay, good. Well, that's simple enough. I'm seeing if there's any in Florida.
Mm-hmm. We have training centers, but no county fairs. So. I'm looking to visit some of those, or maybe make some of those during the winter time.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that obviously
get out of an Ohio winter.
We obviously
there's a training center in Hawkinsville, Georgia, that has a great harness festival that actually was just about 2 weeks ago, and they have a pig roast with that, a barbecue festival, and a Little Miss Hawkinsville. I'm afraid we've all just missed that. But
and Pinehurst do the same thing in North Carolina. They have a nice weekend of events, but they're a matinee type event. It's not, they don't have as many corn dogs. It's not really an agricultural fair, so you can't see the steer show or the hog show going on. But nonetheless, it's still the same type of atmosphere.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're making me hungry now is what you're doing.
Well, that's why I've been postponing it, so now I'm trying to decide on what to have for lunch.
Well, this has been terrific. I'm actually there. I'm at fairs.ustrotting.com, and it was very easy just to put in Florida and come see there are a couple fairs here that have trotting, and it does look like, boy, it's an east of the Mississippi thing, isn't it?
Pretty much so. Pretty much so.
Yeah. One other fair, too, that I had the opportunity to attend at one point was the Shenandoah County Fair in Virginia.
I have never been, but they say that it's an event in itself.
It is. It's an event in itself. And we'll leave it at that. So thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it. It's bringing back memories.
All right. Thank you, Glenn and Alan.
Well, now I really am hungry for fried Oreos and all the things you get at fairs. I mean, I have to admit, I am a fair food junkie.
It's the American way, Glenn, really.
That's true.
It's your right as an American to have all the fried Oreos you want.
Well, let's, after this word from Squarespace, we are going to speak to TJ Burkett, and he is editor of your Hoofbeats magazine, but he's here on a different capacity today.
TJ is an ace handicapper, but even better than that, he's very good at explaining how a rookie can go to the racetrack and make some sense of the program, make some sense of the horses on the track, and maybe make a little bit of money betting.
Glenn the Geek here. You know, I get asked all the time by horse people, I want to build my own website. What service should I use? Well, there's only one service I recommend without hesitation, and that is Squarespace.com. If you're looking to build a website for your horse farm, training business, boarding stable, or personal rider page, or maybe even a blog, and you want to do it yourself and end up with a professional-looking website, then there's only one place to go, Squarespace. Squarespace makes it easy with one of the simplest do-it-yourself interfaces available. You choose the theme you like, and then you just drag and drop the elements you want into that theme and start adding your pictures and content, and off you go. Plus, they give you 15 days to try it with no strings. They don't even ask for your credit card. If you sell things, they even have an e-commerce solution. Plus, your new website will integrate with Facebook and Twitter like a dream. I've been using this company for years and have recommended it to dozens of horse people. No matter what your skill level, Squarespace is for you. Give it a try for 15 days free by going to horseradionetwork.com and clicking on the Squarespace banner on the right side of the page. Horseradionetwork.com, click on the Squarespace banner on the right side of the page. Well, hi, TJ, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Glenn.
You know, all of us that drive horses and all of us that have horses, we all go to the track, whether it's thoroughbred or harness racing or whatever. And, you know, we go. Some of us bet. My wife doesn't bet because she just doesn't get it all that much and doesn't care. And I personally pick horses by name, and I win as much as everybody else. But we have you on today to talk about betting 101, betting for rookies. So, you know, if you have no betting experience at all, what should I know when I go to the track?
Well, first of all, Glenn, there is no bad angle when trying to pick a racehorse. I think betting a horse's name is just as good as any. Sometimes I like to look at the horses when they come out for the post parade, and maybe if I see one that has their ears up and they look like they're fit and they're happy to be out there, that's a good a chance as any to have one to win. But we have the program, which has probably a lot more information than a beginner wants to see.
Can't read it. I've been going to racetracks for 30 years. it's too many numbers.
Well, there's a couple of things that are good to look at when you're looking at the program for the first time. I mean, first of all, every horse is showing that's their every line in that program is the horse's previous races in reverse chronological order. So the horse's most recent race is listed first, and then there's usually about six or seven there. And the very first thing you can look at is it'll show the horse's finish position about midway through. And, I mean, if a horse has been finishing first, second, or third in its previous races, I mean, that shows a good chance that the horse is going to do it again. Another thing to look at is the driver of the horse. I would say it's about 70% horse and 30% driver when they're out there, but with the sulkies as wide and as long as they are, the driver has a very big job in trying to get the horse around the other horses in order to win the race. So you can see which drivers are the best. Their statistics are right there listed, usually right above the horse's name. Most tracks have about two or three top drivers, and you can tell which ones are the top drivers by looking at the leaderboard listed inside the program, but also their stats will be listed there right next to the horses or right next to the driver's name.
TJ, I have a quick question. Those numbers are usually a 0.240, 0.3. So, I mean, it looks kind of like baseball batting numbers. Is that a comparable expression of their ability? Like a batting average?
Yes, it's the USDA calls that the universal driver rating, and it's much like a batting average. It's a pretty simple formula that calculates their percentage of times that they're in the top three. You'll see a list of four numbers there, followed by the batting average, like you said, which condenses those numbers.
So what's a good number and what's a bad number?
It's just like baseball. I think anything over 300 or .300 is a good driver, somebody who shows success over and over on the racetrack. And usually the best drivers, they are named to drive the best horses. And several times drivers are named to drive more than one horse in a race, and they get a chance to pick which one they think has the best chance of winning. So drivers are a very important factor when trying to handicap.
Okay, so write that down. So look for drivers that have greater averages than 300. Okay.
And in harness racing, the weight of the jockey or driver in this case is not as important as it is in thoroughbreds, right?
No, absolutely not. The way that the drivers sit in the sulky, the seat is offset behind the arch of the sulky, so they're sitting behind the wheels, and when they sit behind the wheels, the drivers actually lift up on the shafts of the sulky, which takes a lot of the weight off of the horse. So the best drivers tend to be within the 140 to 160 pound range, but it's not as important as in thoroughbred racing, where a jockey has to weigh in before and after every race.
Okay.
Now, TJ, if I go to a casino, the expression "the house always wins" goes through my mind, but it's not that way at the racetrack, is it? There's no house.
No, absolutely not. That's the biggest difference between casino gaming and wagering on harness racing or horse racing in general. In the casino, they want to take your money. That you walk in and they want to have your money. Now at the racetrack, they're putting on the service of collecting everyone's bets, and they take a percentage of all the total money wagered, and then they have to pay everything back out. So the racetrack wants you to win. They want you to win so that you will continue to bet, because they take a percentage of the total money wagered. So the more that people bet, the more that the racetrack takes in. So in essence, the racetrack is on your side.
So who am I betting against then?
You're betting against everyone you see there in the stands along with you, as well as people from around the country and around the world, since wagering on harness racing is a global sport, and people are watching it through simulcasting all over the world. They can watch it on TV and bet over the computer as well. So you're betting against everyone else.
So I'm trying to be a little bit smarter than all those other people milling around at the track, I guess.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Now, what if I want to bet? I don't know. If you play $2 on the lottery, you could win scads and scads of money. But usually, that doesn't happen at the racetrack. Why is that?
Because in the lottery, you have a 1 in 100 million chance of winning a race or winning.
Well, that's no good.
Winning the lottery. But in racing, you're betting, you can see the odds of each of your bets right there on the tote board. If you look on the tote board, each horse's number will have its projected win odds listed next to it, and so you can calculate how much you're going to win. And it's usually much, much lower, because first of all, there's fewer combinations, and secondly, there's a lot more money that you can possibly win there. So when you bet on horse races, you have a chance to win a lot more times, but certainly not as much money as if you were betting betting the lottery.
Okay. Well, now there's also, I mean, I hear about there. Obviously, betting a horse to win is that's clear. But can you explain what betting to place and betting to show means? Win, place, show. Win is clear. The horse comes in first, you bet on them to win. You've won. But what is place and show?
Well, there are dozens, literally dozens of different ways you can bet on a horse race, but for newcomers to the track, I would say concentrate on betting on a horse to win. I mean, it's for thousands of years, as long as horse racing has been around, it's always been about my horse is faster than your horse. So concentrate on betting horses to win. Now, in answer to your question, betting a horse to place means that you will be paid if a horse either gets first or second, but it'll pay considerably less because the odds are lower. And if you bet a horse to show, you'll get paid if the horse finishes first, second, or third. But again, I recommend that you you go out there and try to pick winners, because that's what we're all trying to do. The guys on the track are trying to win, and the people in the stands are trying to win as well. So let's all try to win.
Okay. Now here, one more question. Then I know Glenn is a rookie and is still picking horses by names. But a wise man once told me that when you go to a half mile track, because of course horses race a mile, so they have to go around twice, that the best thing to do is rip the program in half, throw away the horses on the outside, and just bet the horses that are on the racing starting from the inside of the track. Why is that? And do you think that's good advice?
Well, it's a simple case of distance. The horses that start further out in the further post positions have a greater distance to travel in order to get to the rail, which is the shortest way around the track, because the drivers want to get the horses around in the shortest distance possible. Now, it is a good point to remember that betting horses in the 1 through 4 post positions have a much larger chance of winning than those in the outside post positions. So when I go to the track, what I do is I look at the horses from the bottom up. I start with the horses from the farthest outside. And if a horse really stands out to me out there, then I might give it a better chance as I start moving in. Because if you start at the top, you're just going to concentrate on those horses on the top. And then you'll probably end up missing out on a horse that will win from the outside post because it's just that good.
I'll tell you something else I really have to think about. I always correlate harness racing more to NASCAR races, in that in traditional thoroughbred racing, to find a hole is much easier because you need a much smaller hole. With harness racing, like in NASCAR, you need a bigger hole. You got to get the cart through too. So that really does reduce the odds of being able to get through a hole.
Right, and that is absolutely right, Glenn. It's that's why the driver is so important, because they have to be the ones that are trying to fit the horse and the sulky through those holes. That's also why you see horses racing a lot in single file earlier on in the race and without horses racing on the outside, because they want to get around the track in the shortest distance and then save that final burst for toward the end of the race. So it's certainly a game of position. And if you do find your horse is near the rear of the field earlier on the race, don't lose heart, because you know if the driver just might be trying to find position and trying to find a horse that he can race behind in order to draft, just like in NASCAR racing, because we certainly do that as well.
I was going to ask that, if you guys draft. Yeah, okay.
Now, TJ, I had another question. When you go to the track, especially if you're a rookie, you're in line, there's just a few minutes till the races, there's people behind you, you've got your money in your hand, you're trying to remember your horse's name or number or whatever. What do you say when you get up to the teller there? What information do you need to give them? Because you need to do it in a pretty quick manner and obviously an accurate one.
Well, whatever I say is wrong, because they snip at me every time. So
TJ's going to tell us now.
Okay,
pay attention,
good, because
Glenn.
I apparently don't get it right.
Well, the first thing you need to know as a beginning bettor is to go up and bet early, first of all, because the closer the race gets to post time,
the
more people are in line, yeah, and then the mutual tellers are trying to serve as many people as they can right before the race goes off. So if you have any questions, race tellers will be very happy to help you answer any questions if you go up pretty much right after the race. That's when, you know, not a lot is going on, and they can help you then. So be sure to bet early, and then when you do get up there, it's four things. So you have to name the racetrack, because like I said before, you can bet on races from all over the world, so there might be 15 or 20 different racetracks racing on the same night. So make sure to name the racetrack, then the race number, then the amount of the bet, and the minimum bet is $2. We're betting to win, so you're going to say $2 to win on the horse's program number. Don't tell the teller the horse's name. They don't know the name. They have to type in the number into the machine. So racetrack, race number, amount of bet, type of bet, and the horse's program number.
Okay, and then do you put it in your lucky pocket or your lucky shoe, your lucky place in the wallet? That's key too, isn't it?
Right, and there's one more thing you got to do. Make sure that you look at the ticket and make sure that they typed it in correctly, because once you leave with that ticket, you're stuck with it. And sometimes it works out, and more often than not, it doesn't. So make sure you pay and get the right numbers on that ticket.
Now, TJ, if somebody wanted a little bit more education than we were able to give them here on this show, what options does the USDA have for some education on handicapping?
We have an excellent program right now called Horse Racing Night School. Now, this is it's an online live chat. It's actually coming on. It's on Tuesday nights at 8:30 Eastern. You can access it at handicapping.ustrotting.com. And if you go there, you can see the live chat. You can come on during the live chat, and we also have listed all of the archives from the chat, so you could go there as soon as you get home from listening to this broadcast. And there's a lot of great guys who are explaining how and the whys and all of the nuances of betting on horse racing in general. And with the Kentucky Derby coming up, it's a great way to learn how to pick a winner.
Well, that sounds super. Everything you need to know, and it's not just a lesson a week. If you've missed a week, you've got back lessons as well.
Right. The new episodes are live on Tuesdays at 8:30, but otherwise you can go there at any time, handicapping.ustrotting.com, and you can see the archives there.
Is it interactive? Can you ask questions?
Absolutely. During the live chat, you can ask questions of the hosts and of their guests, and they get top handicappers and trainers and drivers and jockeys on there all the time, and it's a great way to learn from the insiders.
Wonderful.
Well, very good. Thank you, TJ, for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Now I really want to go to the track. I want to go to a fair after what I've learned today because I really want to eat all the bad food, and now I want to go to a track because I want to bet. So I'm ready.
Well, I will see you there, Glenn. It was good being on the show today.
That's terrific. You lined up a whole bunch of great guests. I'll tell you what, that says a lot for your organization when you get four guests on like that and they're all so well-spoken and really know their jobs.
Well, thank you so much, Glenn. We feel like we've got a great message to say. We've got horses that can bring a whole lot of fun to people, whether you want to drive them, watch them, bet on them, participate in just about any way. And we hope folks will come out to their fair, their local fair, maybe to driving school. You've got another 10 days, all you driving folks, to find somebody to feed your horses while you're away. Pack up your boots, pack up your helmet, and join us. And you can find everything you need to know at ustrotting.com. And you know what? I don't need to spell trotting.com for your audience, do I?
No, we know how to do that. That's for sure. Well, thank you, Ellen. You've been a trooper here helping us out today and helping us learn more about the association. Be sure to log in to our website at Driving Radio Show for all the links. Of course, it's ustrotting.com, but I'll put all the links in, too, that we heard throughout the show today. So if you want to find a specific one, that'll be in our show notes at the Driving Radio Show. Wendy will be back next week, don't worry, in all her glory. She'll be here, raring and ready to go. We'll hear about Martin's auction, and I need to find out if I won the bet about whether she was going to buy a carriage or not. And, you know, we want you to listen in also to all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network. We have 8 of them. You can find them all at horseradionetwork.com. And speaking of driving, on the Horses in the Morning show, which I host with Jamie Jennings, we are going to be covering the weekend coming up. We're, of course, going to be talking about the Kentucky Derby in the shows coming up this week. So definitely take a listen to that. We're going to be talking about the specific horses and who we expect will be the winners. And we're going to be making our predictions, which every year are wrong 100% of the time. So you do not want to listen to our predictions and go bet on them. That would be a bad mistake. And we also want to thank our sponsors, the American Driving Society, Kentucky Performance Products, and Squarespace.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you so much for having me, Glenn.